I wrote one blue post this afternoon. And then as soon as I came into the dergah and made the afternoon salat and had my head in prostration, it became so clear to me that we are, each of us is our own kingdom, of course, what we're told. And the main injustice happens by ourselves, toward ourselves, and of course then others. Because if we are unjust to our own heart, we will be inevitably unjust to others. So, and how clear, you know, this is what the Sufi path is about. It's about clearing our heart. It's about becoming just, about becoming a Siddiq, a truthful one, and a loving, compassionate one. And that is the only way we will see justice in the world, the only way. You cannot regulate justice. You can have laws. Laws are extremely helpful, as we see civil laws in society. But no matter how many laws you have, you cannot, change people's nature, really. So that is what's addressed by mystic paths. And as I said, I began reading this afternoon. I found it on the internet, and it's historical, from historical sources, on what happened at Karbala. And it's so terrible, it almost can't be shared verbally. As you say, he was, they hadn't drunk water for 3 days, probably hadn't had food for more than that. And there was a specific order given by the ruler at that time, whose name I will not mention, of Iraq, or of the so-called caliphate. I mean, clearly you see the division where the spiritual rulership or authority is then kind of pushed away from the earthly, and with the Muawiyah, the move to Syria, it becomes the worldly. That's that has always been then the conflict between the worldly and the spiritual. You know, not always. Sometimes the spiritual has permeated and has governed or guided the worldly, but the worldly at times has separated, dramatically, as happened at the time of, obviously, Karbala, and where they went opposite, in a total opposite direction from all the spiritual instruction of the Prophet, of the Quran, of all the prophets and messengers. And so, it's such clear teaching for us then who experience it just by reading about it or by hearing about it from our guides like Muzaffar Effendi and Noor, certainly Effendi even more poignantly, as I said, because he was a descendant. And also he was so immersed in that, the world of early Islam, of the Ahl-i Bayt, of the Shia Mukhlisiyya. So that's who we are. It's so clear. We are the Shia. We are, of course, of the party, of the family, of the Ahl-i Bayt, the Mukhlisiyya, the ones who, inshallah, long for purification. And we are not imitators in that way. We are people who long to replicate. And in one of Sheikh Noor's beautiful translation of one of the ayats, it says, replicate within yourself the states of the sheikhs and the guides and the friends of God. Don't just, have them there as a picture and kind of venerate them. No. The real veneration is by taking them within ourselves. So, inshallah, may we truly absorb everything that happened, of all the magnificent virtues demonstrated by Imam Hussein and his family and companions, his son, his the heroism was, you know, awesome of his followers, his companions, people who loved him. And so it really shows that only love will bring such a high level of virtue. You can't have virtue without love, without great love. Otherwise, you know, no one can attain those, that level of transformation or beauty or selflessness and integrity without great love. Because only through great love do you die to yourself. And only by dying to ourselves can we truly be and truly become in the divine way, in the holy way. So, you know, I might send this out as a just as a text or something for anyone who wants to. I've never read that such a detailed account, and I'll post tonight or tomorrow where it comes from, so we can all access it. It's a book called The Secrets of Karbala, I think. Or The Secret of, or the, what is it mentioned there, the name of the book? And so it will have every day, each chapter talks about a certain day of the journey. And so tomorrow is the day, of course, tonight already, you know, the survivors were brought together as captives and brought and on this, the kind of long walk, as the Cherokees call it, the path of tears. So that was their path of tears back to Damascus. And there, the sister of Imam Hussein, Hazreti Zainab, demonstrated the same courage and integrity and luminosity as her brother toward, you know, the ruler. They're speaking out very forcefully in his presence. And I think she probably saved them by doing that. Yeah? Yeah?
No, I was thinking.
Oh, you're just thinking. And, you know, it's said that his head was brought to, was buried somewhere where I didn't recognize, and then later one of the Muslim governors or something brought it to Egypt, to where it is now resides in the Masjid al-Hussein, I guess it's called. Yeah. And we went to visit it with Effendi, and it said that in that masjid, that's what Effendi says, the kutub of the time, every age, there is one kutub or every generation, the leading saint of the Ummah, not necessarily known, visits that masjid every day or every night. Wow. It's very interesting. So it's definitely a mystical pilgrimage for their souls. Alhamdulillah. But, you know, always as we received this tradition from Effendi and then Noor, there was always that aspect also of joy together with this terrible. So it's not just about lamenting, it's the great joy of Allah's mercy. So for Imam Hussein, the salvation was death. There was nothing on earth in a way that he desired anymore. You know, that we could say, or maybe, and he had given, he was, after all, was he 62 or around that age? In other words, a mature life. And he had given so much teachings, and we have that beautiful prayer of his from the day of Arafat. And you know, that prayer is such a model of that. Of that act of taking census within oneself. That's what he does, and that's what Imam Ali does in his prayers. It's really hardly ever so much about accusing others as really accusing oneself. And seeing, being able to see clearly into the frailties of ourself, the weaknesses, and to bring them to Allah. Where else are we going to bring them? Who else is merciful enough to be able to take those joyfully and be grateful for them? Allah is grateful when we bring our errors and our shortcomings, because Allah welcomes the gift from us and the recognition of our own weakness. As Allah has said, I have created you weak, so it's not even our fault. Not our fault. But we have to at least learn to know our own nature. That we have is a responsibility of ours. Not deny it. Alhamdulillah. So on this day, there are great other moments of salvation. They say that's the day Hazrat Isa alayhi salam was raised up to the fourth heaven, where he still is, inshallah, until he descends. Did not die, but is. So he was saved from his pursuers and people who wanted to take his life. And it's so clear also in this account of Karbala how there's that ayat in Quran where it says, you know, they somehow, it's like untruth wants to extinguish the light of truth, really, with their, but they are not allowed, they are not able to, or the deniers want to extinguish the light of truth with their mouths, but they are not able to. And in this event of Karbala, one of the very deeply touching, or part of the deeply touching acts, are the deliveries, the speeches of Imam Hussein and others on the battlefield. They would actually speak to the enemy who were there, because in the Arab fashion, at first you would have two fighters from each side. You know, that was the way of the noble way. But then, again and again, they betrayed that. The other army betrayed that by then sending, when they saw they couldn't overcome one of the companions, then they would attack from behind or send in, you know, a whole group to overcome that one who was so valiant. So on several occasions, Imam Hussein and others addressed the army that was facing them, and, you know, tried to evoke in their minds and in their hearts that their connection to their prophet and to bring sense and open their eyes. But then the captain of that army would immediately sense, when he sensed that their hearts were swaying and that they were heeding this, heeding the truth, then he would immediately say, you know, speak badly and say, "I was just trying to confuse you," and attack right away. So the power of the word, but exactly that he literally extinguished it, you know, so that it could not catch hold in these hearts and bring about a whole change of destiny, which obviously we know is not possible. But so, alhamdulillah, and of course we're celebrating with Noah tonight with our Ashura. It's such a beautiful tradition that all the barrels on the ship had reached their bottom. Such teaching for us, because sometimes we feel too. We you know, you reach the end of your rope, or you reach your last capacity to bear something, to bear it at all, or to bear it with some degree of gratitude, or at least patience, or and then comes, you know, the salvation, the mercy, the response. I mean, we see this again and again in our own life and in accounts of others. So we should know that. We should know that even though we think we're in the desert and we're far from water, but it will come, that downpour of mercy will come to us, and that our own faith is proven by that ability to both to know that and then, of course, to... It's because we know that, really, that we can tolerate or bear. Because if we didn't know that Allah was the All-Merciful, maybe even just, you know, falling down or stubbing our toe would be unbearable. You know, we wouldn't be able to bear anything because our bodies are, after all, very sensitive. Our minds are inflammable and emotions can be chaotic. But it's for the people of faith, it's that bondedness to Allah, that trusting in the All-Merciful, that gives them that beauty of composure and strength within hardship. So alhamdulillah, may it encourage us and make us more beautiful and more able to bear and transform. Because we're not just bearing, we're also actually transforming every moment that we are in an adverse situation. Actually, our whole nafs is transforming and becoming more beautiful. Part of human nature, and of, I would say, mature human nature, is to be able to both have both grief and joy at the same time. That, and because this is who we are. We are both grievous and we are both you know, delightful. So we, you know, we, as we witness, as we contemplate the horrors going on and yes, perpetrated by human beings, which the angels were not tolerating, yes, but if we bring to it the divine presence and that divine, that great love, this great love is a vast and stormy ocean. So there's two things, the storminess and the ocean, that oceanic divinity and presence and love, then that is when we become really mature. You know, Sheikh Noor, and some of us have experienced both laughing and weeping at the same time. You know, that state, which is a very special state. You know, it's said that, as we will probably find on the last day or day of resurrection, everything that we thought was contradictory or confusing in life and in the universe, we will see immense harmony. We will see how everything was always in harmony, in tune with each other, in symbiosis, working together. And so it's said even that the 10th of Muharram is that day for, yes, all the traditions, that there is, that it marks a special day in the universe, in the life of the universe, that has this particular quality of salvation. So, you know, alhamdulillah. And so we expect that for ourselves, salvation.
Salvation.
To really taste salvation, we have to go through that experience of martyrdom or affliction or suffering. If we don't feel it, we won't even have that joy or that tremendous transformation, transformative. It's true.